Ahaz was the king of Judah in the time when the kingdom had been divided into two, Israel in the north and Judah in the south. The capital of Judah was Jerusalem. So the king of Israel and the king of Aram were plotting to put a puppet king on the throne in Jerusalem who would do their bidding. And Ahaz was a kind of a weak king, and he was nervous about this, and so he began to make alliances with other kings to thwart off the enemy. And that's when the prophet Isaiah goes to him and says, have some faith. Ask anything of the Lord, be it as high as the sky or as deep as the netherworld. You know, dream big. Ask God. Don't start making human alliances. This is God's kingdom. And the line of David, God has promised that he will keep it forever. And so why are you doing this? And Ahaz, who has no faith at all, says, oh, I don't want to tempt God. I don't want to bother God with my little problems, which is a faithless thing to say. And Isaiah, almost in a fit of anger, says, you don't want a sign. I'm going to give you a sign. The virgin shall be with child and bear a son and name him Emmanuel. So this was 700 years before Christ. Was Isaiah talking about Jesus? I don't think so. Who knows what Isaiah meant? But Luke, when he's writing his gospel, quotes those very words from Isaiah and applies them to Jesus. Now, this is something typical that the New Testament authors and the early theologians of the church all did. They looked back at the Old Testament, which was their scriptures, and they reread them with new eyes, and they saw Christ everywhere. They saw Moses as a type for Christ. They saw Noah as a type for Christ. And Luke sees in this prophecy of Isaiah referencing Jesus. So hindsight can be better than the foresight. But it's hindsight even with a larger vision. We're not taking these things literally. When other New Testament authors interpret the suffering servant Psalms of Isaiah to mean Christ, 700 years before Christ, when Isaiah wrote those passages, he wasn't thinking of Jesus, but the New Testament authors look back and say, ah, there it is, it's a clear sign. So, if Isaiah wasn't meaning Jesus, then what does that mean? The virgin shall be with child and bear a son and name him Emmanuel. In the Bible and in the liturgy, virgin refers not just to someone who has not had sex yet. In a larger sense, it means something original, something that has never happened before. So when God spoke and creation began to evolve, what we might in scientific terms call the Big Bang, that's God's voice speaking and creation happened, that was original. It was virginal. Nothing like that had ever happened before. In all the infinity of God's existence, Father, Son, and Spirit, creation outside of God had never happened before, so this is a virginal experience. And in a way, it remains virginal all through the 14 billion years of the evolutionary process, because as new galaxies and stars and planets and space evolved and particles in every single particle of all of that, God was virginally there. You see, God never looked away. God never walked away from his creation, but was always in it and involved in it and passionately in love with it. And so in every particle, there's some minuscule kind of reflection of the divinity of God. And then when humans come on the scene with the ability to think and reflect and love freely, this virginal experience becomes even more powerful. And so in human terms, we would say God is forever offering an invitation to relationship, an invitation to love. I will be your God and you will be my people. I'm going to love you and I want you to love me back so that we can be in an eternal relationship. And so it's the call and the response. Now, in Mary, the virgin par excellence, that call and response is so open and so powerful that it conceives Jesus. The openness, the willingness, the let it be of Mary is so undiluted, so pure, that it brings forth a son, and we name him Emmanuel. And Luke adds to Isaiah's prophecy the meaning of the word Emmanuel, God with us. And that's always a virginal experience because each of us has been baptized into Christ. But Christ never came into each of us the same. It's always virginal. God never came into anybody in existence the way he came into me. And nothing about God's presence was ever exactly the same as the way it is in you. It's always virginal. It's always original. And we celebrate that every Sunday here at the Mass because the Mass has been celebrated for 2,000 years all over the world. We're doing the same thing that's been done for all these centuries. What's original here? What's new? Because it never happened in Manhattan, Kansas, on this morning, at this time, and in this people. It's always virginal. So there's something fresh and new and vibrant about this experience every time we open ourselves to it. And so in this Mass, God is calling us, God is inviting us into relationship, and we are responding, and we are responding by reflecting, remembering what he did for us on Calvary and what he did at the Last Supper. And we are saying yes to that, like Mary, and we are offering our lives on the altar along with Christ in our faith response. God died for me. I'm willing to die for God. That's the call and the response. It's the love relationship. And word always becomes flesh. The Word of God that was there in the beginning, think of the prologue of John's Gospel. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So from that virginal beginning, which had no beginning, it's that virginal, the Word existed. And then in human history, it took on expression, verbal expression, so that it takes on more of a fleshiness to it because it gets written on a page and it gets proclaimed to our ears. And so we feed on that word, and so that word is at that table called the ambo. But word always moves toward flesh. And so that word that we proclaimed there at that table becomes flesh at this table. And how does that happen? Through you and me. Because we hear that word and we say yes, and it gets born at the altar. God becomes flesh every time we celebrate the Eucharist. This is a virginal experience, a powerful experience that is available to us all the time. Now, God being with us is, we're going to spend the rest of our Christian lives reflecting on what that means. And for each of us, it's unique, it's always virginal. But what exactly does it mean, God is with me? One of the 20th century theologians said one time that the God with us, the presence of God in my body, in my life, is both warm and inviting and frightening at the same time. Because I can't push it off onto somebody else or to something else. We Catholics love to push it off on the tabernacle and say, well, Christ is there. It's harder to say he's here in me. And what would that require of me? And what does that mean exactly? Well, that same theologian said it is absolute mystery because it begins with the infinity of the Word. And it ends with the infinity of the never-ending day, the realized kingdom. And all of that from there to there is in here. And I'm never going to understand that. I'm never going to be able to mend my mind completely around that. I'm never going to be able to say completely yes to that like Mary did. And yet, it grows in me. And my yes becomes stronger. It becomes more pure as life goes on. And the longer I live and the more I pray and the more I do justice and the more I give myself over to others and to God, it just becomes more and more powerful. So if you're 70, you get that more than if you're 16. It's just the way human spirituality progresses, or at least it potentially progresses. It doesn't always. We have to keep praying. We have to keep opening ourselves to the mystery. But the potential grows and grows if we're open to it.